The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. You know, I suppose I should also say Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, Happy 2019. 2019. That is the first time I have said that this year. So, where do I even begin? Where do I even begin to recap? You want to know where I'm going to begin? I'm going to begin with Floyd, because there's a bit of an I told you so here, right? I am the one that told you guys this was fishy from the beginning. I did predict for you that Floyd was going to be the one getting the wool pulled over his eyes. That's true. This was a bit of the double cross, if you will. I'm assuming you guys have seen Floyd's fight. You've at least read about it or seen some clips. I'm assuming. If you didn't, maybe I should back up. Floyd went out and did a work. In Japan, he fought on New Year's Eve. Japanese fighter who was 20 years old. Big part of the storyline was this guy's youth. He was 20 years old. They kept making a big thing about him being 20 years old. But a great kickboxer. A very skilled and decorated kickboxer. Maybe even a champion kickboxer. I don't know that for sure. But undefeated, great fighter. And I thought they were going to bring Floyd out there and rob him, right? Put their own guy over who they got under contract and steal this from Floyd. They made it 9 minutes, 3-3, so amateur time rules. And Floyd just never seemed into this thing. I mean, from the jump, the media was weird, and you're hearing that it's called an exhibition, and then you get the promoter to come out and go, oh, no, we're lost in translation there. That's an American term. Exhibition over here just means, you know, an extravaganza, a specialty, an exhibition fight, not a sparring session. But Floyd had represented to the media that it was just that. It was a sparring session. So everything was very goofy from the beginning. And we all, trying to be the smart marks in the room, were trying to make the prediction based on logic. What happened was so many people started to catch on. So many people wanted to be able to predict the outcome that they then double-crossed the double-cross. And they made the Japanese guy do the job. I mean, this thing was really weird. Just by example, okay, if you guys, I happen to stay up, but I'm a nighttime guy. But this fight didn't happen. I mean, the whole show was like 8 hours. It was painfully long. And all I'm doing is reading along. I'm reading the play-by-play at bloodyelbow.com. So, I mean, this thing takes forever. It didn't even start until 1 a.m. Eastern. So it's this never-ending show. And then when they finally get to the main event, which by now, I mean, you're ready to fade to black and roll the credits as a viewer. But you then have to wait because Floyd has not arrived at the arena. Floyd is an hour late. Nobody knows if the fight's even going to happen. So now this, everybody knows it's going to be a very fishy ending to the fight. That was very clear that this was not a straight up boxing contest or exchange of any kind. But now you're wondering, oh, is that the big swerve? Is Floyd doesn't show up? I guess we got to reschedule. Ha ha. Thanks everybody for buying. What was weird about that is Floyd was there. Floyd was there the whole time. I can completely confirm that for you. But the whole story that Floyd was late was just very weird to put out in the first place, because now you're make-believing like Floyd's out with other things to do. Floyd doesn't have a car. He's in Japan. The promoter picks him up. He didn't have any of those. He couldn't show up late if he wanted to. He's got to get in the car when the promoter pulls up to the hotel. Plus, he was there. I knew people that were there. Floyd was in the arena. So that part of the story was weird, because then they did make the viewer and the audience and the in-house audience wait an hour with this fugazi tale of Floyd not being there. Okay, fine. So the fight starts, and, you know, right off the bat, just going back to knowing and being able to predict for you guys ahead of time that this wasn't straight up. Let's just look at it a little bit closer. Okay. One of the things that Floyd was very worried about when he fought Connor, and he was playing it like I'm not worried about anything, but one of the things that he did speak on that concerned him was Connor's age. Connor was 27 years old and Floyd was 40 years old. And he did speak about that. And he took Connor very seriously. Full training camp, locked himself down in Vegas, brought the people in, spent the money, 2 sessions a day, every day in the gym. Did the build-up, did the media, but he trained and prepared, and you could see that. You could see that within his body. You could see that when he was on the scale. You could see that within the duration of the bout going almost a half hour. He took a 27-year-old Conor McGregor who had never done stand-up fighting before very seriously. He did not take a 20-year-old kickboxing champion, an undefeated athlete, in this realm. He took Connor seriously, who'd never done it before. But he wasn't taking a guy even younger than Connor, who actually did this and did this at a high level to the point of championships with any kind of seriousness. Right there was a big clue that, okay, the fix is already in. Why prepare for a match if you don't have a match? So he comes out, he's fooling around, he wears some mask, he's joking around with his corner, and then when the actual fight starts, he's smiling at this guy. At one point, he drops his hands. He never smiled at Conor McGregor, and he never dropped his hands once. And you won it. It wouldn't matter how much better you are than another guy. If you're a trained competitor in combat, you bring those skills in. The guy could be terrible, or the guy could be great. You are trained in a specific way to go out there and compete. Floyd didn't do that. He's smiling. He drops his hands. He's daring the guy to hit him while he's within range. Very similar to the way Floyd behaved at WrestleMania a number of years ago when he took on The Big Show. And it was very similar body mechanics and language for the same reason. This was wrestling. Floyd throws a body shot that may or may not have touched his opponent. I've watched it a few times. I couldn't even tell if he made contact. The guy goes down. The guy goes down a total of 3 times inside of 2 minutes. Conor McGregor went down 0 times. In 30 minutes. Just to put it in perspective for you. You'll also remember the Conor McGregor fight. There was a huge to-do about the gloves. The gloves that they were going to wear. No Mexican-made gloves. No horsehair-made gloves. Specific amount of... All this inspection on the gloves. Conor McGregor could not have possibly cared less. Did not negotiate. Did not send a team in. Just send it over to me and I'll sign it. And then he talked about why. So guys, my entire life, I've never checked to see where a glove was made. What do I give a damn if they're made in Mexico? I have no idea where they are made. And I didn't even know what they put in gloves, let alone horsehair. So these were very important things to Floyd and his camp. And we know that. And we have evidence of that. In this fight, there was no talk of it. And they did it in 8-ounce gloves. Which is the last thing Floyd was willing to do in the Conor McGregor fight. Conor McGregor, who had no experience. Floyd was taking on a guy with much more experience and let him have the glove choice. I mean, look, the whole thing was just weird and it was fugazi and I don't fully understand it, but Japan is different. That's a piece of the psychology. Errol Hawani weighed in on this. He also thought it was a fugazi and worked fight. He's just saying, but man, I can't make sense of this because you let Floyd go over. That's not the way you would do a work. That's true by North American psychological standards. In Japan, it's not about the outcome. It's about the experience. They will applaud one of their own for having gone in and tried, for having had that experience, for having been in there with Floyd. It's just a totally different mindset. But ultimately, it ended in the double cross. So now you take a look at the world of the free format fighting systems, the UFC specifically, and what a card. You know, and it wasn't just the title fights. Chad Mendes lost a fight that I did not think he would lose against an opponent who called him out, who I did not think knew exactly what he was getting into. Now I think that opponent should be fighting Max for the world championship. So what a difference a 3-round contest can make, right? There was other great fights on the card too, but I mean, that was one of them. So you start to get up to Cyborg and Amanda. And Cyborg and Amanda, I was bullish on Cyborg, as were the betting fans. She was the very clear favorite. But I was also very reserved with it because I did believe in Amanda. I just didn't believe that Amanda would go out there and fight her fight. So many people lose to Cyborg. Cyborg gets called the Mike Tyson of MMA. To explain for you what that comparison is, that doesn't mean she comes out there with her beady little eyes bobbing side to side and throwing uppercuts. That's not what it means. It means she's an intimidating force that can wilt an opponent in the locker room before the contest ever happens. And when the opponent gets in there, they don't bring their skills with them because they are so scared. And Cyborg is the Mike Tyson of MMA for that reason. Opponents don't go in there and play with the one that brought them. They go in there hesitant, worried, and with one goal in mind, which is each minute that I stay out here and survive and each round that goes on is a win. Amanda has incredible skills, and the only thing I wanted to see as a fan was Amanda come out, come across the ring, and start throwing those big heavy hands at Cyborg's face. Whatever happens after that happens after that. But I've seen Cyborg in about every situation you could imagine, except that one, and that's not her fault. It's just the opponents were so worried. They just didn't do that. Well, Amanda did. Amanda came right out there. She looked calm as can be, looked like she looked before every other fight, used her skills, which was good boxing, closed the range, took the shots back, dealt with it, and started trading. That's just what happened. And it made for a very meaningful contest. That was a very meaningful fight. Because you will always hear the dialogue, and then you will always hear me push back on the dialogue of the pound-for-pound great, or the greatest of all time, which is such a wimpy term that's thrown out there every single time a show ends. Every single time a show is over, we have a recency bias, and we talk about the greatest of all time, greatest of all, every time, never miss. And it's also tough because that's one conversation you can't have. It's like Batman versus Superman. There are so many possible integers, nobody can prove it. There is no tournament, there is no contest, and the right people never come to the table. We're seeing it right now in boxing. They want to talk about who the best boxer in the world is. You got Anthony Joshua, who's a complete coward. You got Tyson Fury and Wilder. We can agree it's one of those three, but Anthony Joshua won't get in there with anybody. That should automatically exclude him from the dialogue, but some people in the coward camp will actually add that to his credibility. Well, those guys fought to a draw, and Anthony Joshua could have whipped both of them. He's too much of a chicken to even get in there, which is usually the problem that you always have. Joshua's not the first chicken out there with a belt around his waist that can sell out and fill up an arena and has a bunch of fans that'll back him no matter what he does. We see that happen often, but that's what creates the problem with the pound for pound for current settings or the greatest of all time for historical settings. In this case, everybody came to the table. Everybody came to the table to make this match. This is one thing about professional fighting. If you beat somebody, you take everything they ever did. So in this case, Ronda Rousey was part of the equation. Misha Tate was part of the equation. Gina Carano was part of the equation. Cyborg was part of the equation. And Amanda was part of the equation, as well as Holly Holm, for that matter. As well as Bullet, Valentino. They were all part of it, because somewhere along the way, the two girls that got in there and said, I'm ready, when the referee asked them after that cage door shut, had crossed paths and had victories over everybody I just mentioned. So everybody I just mentioned, all the top female fighters of all time, were in that ring in some level of parity and comparison by proxy. And Amanda came out on top. This is literally the first time there has ever been a fighter where you must say they are the greatest of all time. Because everybody had a hand in this, leading to this. And this is the difference between professional and amateur. A major difference. You know, use the amateurs by example. If you fight an Olympic champion and you beat him, you don't then become the Olympic champion. You should, but you don't. That lineage does not get passed down. If somebody wins a tournament on Saturday night and loses 4 weeks later, they still are the winner of whatever prize that was from a month previous. That's amateur. In professional, you take everything from them. All of it. And in most cases, their money too. In most cases, there's also a win bonus up. It is all on the line, and Amanda left. And I want to just say this about Amanda, because so many times athletes become very pompous with success to the point that you don't even want to be around them. You start to cheer against them. They are blinded by their own success. Amanda appears to be blind of her success. Amanda literally, the only thing that she asked of Dana White after this fight, publicly and on the microphone, was that he consider her for the Hall of Fame. Joe Rogan literally laughed and said, I don't think you need to worry about that. Yeah, well, excuse me. Joe is completely right. She has two world championships simultaneously at two different weight classes, taking out Ronda Rousey and taking out Chris Cyborg. One in 48 seconds and one in 53. Yeah, Amanda, you're going in the Hall of Fame. Okay, young lady, you could never fight again, or you could fight all the time and never win again, ever. You're going in the Hall of Fame. But she appears to be so absent of her own accomplishments, which I find to be, from a markability and a marketing standpoint, her single most redeeming quality. She's just a regular gal. Gets up, works hard, apparently doesn't read her own press clippings. They all read their own press clippings. She apparently doesn't read her own press clippings. There's a young man from the University of Iowa, a defending national champion and former three-time world champion wrestler named Spencer Lee. Spencer Lee lost a wrestling match over the weekend and promptly deleted his Twitter account. I got no problem with him doing that. I got none whatsoever, but he was a guy who read his own clippings and it affected him to the point that it hurt his feelings, to the point that a three-time world champion who got his feelings hurt from a few people on Twitter had to delete the account, and I'm not turning on him at all. I don't want Spitzer to hear, go, guy being a jerk to me. No, not at all. I'm just saying this is a very real thing. It's real for the young athletes, and it's real for the world champion athletes. It doesn't appear to be real for Amanda. The only thing that she asked after setting history, absolute history that will never be broken. It can only be tied. It can never be broken. Whenever you're first to do it, it can never be broken, is that she get a consideration someday for the Hall of Fame. If you're telling me somebody like that, with that level of success and that level of groundedness is not marketable, I would strongly, strongly ask you to reconsider. Move on to the main event. Listen, I don't really know what to say. John Jones is simply the best to have ever done it. It is just as simple as that. And every time you see John fight, you will think, you will make a case for the other guy, which is important, and that is what keeps the industry as a business moving forward. And every time John fights, we get reminded there is just simply nobody that can go with him. Not even go win a round. I would put that performance by John Jones as the second worst performance I've seen John Jones have, right next to OSP, and possibly worse than OSP, and much like OSP. John won every aspect of it, from the hands to the feet to the knees to the grappling to the submission game. He did his part to uphold the conditioning and the strength and the size and the strategy. He won every single round, and he left with a world championship. This is a guy on a bad day. When LeBron James has a bad day, they pull his ass out of the game. When Tiger Woods has a bad day, he comes in 12th. When Serena has a bad game, she goes down in the quarterfinals. When John Jones has a bad day, he walks out of there with world championships. It's really quite remarkable. And I couldn't begin to give you an explanation. But that's what happened.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Podcast One Sports is your home for the Underdog Sports Network. Join Chris Horwedel and friends each week as they cover the biggest stories in sports with shows like Tales from the Association, the Underdog Sports NFL Show, and You're Wrong and Here's Why.
You can't rely on draft picks a lot of times with quarterbacks. There's 4 to 5 quarterbacks drafted in the first round that are complete busts.
Check out all these exciting shows on the Underdog Sports Network every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it comes time to trade or sell it. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch as your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation, moonroof, high mileage. You already knew it was going to cost you. But now you'll know how much of a hit it's going to be so you can plan ahead. When you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer emailed to you in minutes, which you can take to any local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your vehicle, go to TrueCar. True cash offers not available in all areas.
Now, back to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
The Godfather is in here. Joel, what was your big takeaway from the weekend?
Okay, we've got a lot. We've got a lot to cover. First off, Ponyboy, the bad guy saving you like a good partner should. The women. Let's stay on the women before we get back to John Jones. So my takeaway was Joe Rogan, man, he knows a lot about this sport and he knows a lot about jiu-jitsu, but sometimes he misses the boat. I had Amanda going in, and the reason I had Amanda going in is because I thought she could hold her size. So right before the match, Rogan saying, you know, that she's going to be 15 pounds heavier than Amanda. So I do the math real quick. And I said, okay, they're 145. Amanda's got to be 157. Okay, she gained 12 back. That would put Cyborg at over 180 pounds. That's not true. They were within 6 or 7 pounds of each other. So you throw that out there. That was a Hagler-Hearns 58 seconds. Those girls, one of those girls was going to go down just like that happened, and it was absolutely amazing. And the one person that knew it was going to happen like that was Amanda. Now, Cyborg thought it was going to happen the other way, but Amanda truly, that was her game plan. She was going to walk across the ring and start throwing bombs, and that's exactly what happened. So let's stay on that for a little bit. So me and Ladd are thinking, okay, what do we do now?
Ladd and I. Well, I mean, it is.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So what do you do now? What do you do at that weight class? And we start going back and forth, and we start going back and forth.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I would like to be able to respond to what you're going to say, because that is a huge talking point, and I left that one out. So give me your – what do you and Ladd come up with?
Well, when you bounce it around, the only thing you can put out there would be Amanda versus the winner of Holly and Aspen Ladd. Now, everybody thinks Aspen Ladd is going to lose the Holly match. Let me tell you something, guys. Aspen Ladd is a hammer, an absolute hammer. And I love what Amanda did. I believe that Aspen Ladd is going to have such a big performance against one of the greatest who's ever done it, which is Holly Holmes. She's fought more title fights than most women will ever get. I think Aspen Ladd's going to run through her, and I think that is going to change everything. You think the young man that beat Mendez should run up there against Holloway? I believe that's going to happen.
Okay, wow. Well, if Aspen Ladd runs through Holly, yes, you will certainly have somebody for Amanda. But here's the thing. Finding an opponent for Amanda isn't going to be hard, because you got two different weight classes to do it. And I like where you're going in your matchmaking. I certainly wouldn't disagree with you there. I just think that the other side of the coin, somebody else had brought this up, and it might have been Arrow, but I think it was fair. Let's unpack this a little bit. Cyborg's contract is up. She decided to fight out her contract. So her last fight was with Amanda. Now, the obvious play there is she just bet on herself. She didn't like the numbers they came in and offered her. And she thought, well, I'll have, you know, more power to get those numbers to change. Should I let this expire and, you know, get a win over Amanda? Okay, great. But let's just say that Cyborg doesn't come back. Let's just say that. Amanda is likely to want to return to 135. She's more comfortable there. I think she physically probably feels better there. I say this as an athlete that's moved up in weight a few times. You just kind of feel better, a little bit lighter. She also has more parity and more matches. So I'm going to guess that she wants to return to 135, which would mean that 145 now becomes vacant again. 145 was only created. This was Lorenzo's baby. Lorenzo said, hey, look, I think we can do something with Cyborg. Let's create a whole division, get her ass over here, and see what happens. So if you take Cyborg out, let's just say she doesn't resign. That title is now vacant. And now you've got to come up with two gals to go fight for it, which I'm sure you could do. Maybe the Iron Lady returns. Who knows what happens there, but it's not of anything of meaningful consequence to a division. A division that does not have very many people signed to it. In fact, of all the divisions in the UFC, that has the least amount of participants signed. You see where I'm going with that. Possibly you get rid of the division. Okay, that's the cold hard statement.
That was exactly what I asked you the last show we did. If Amanda wins that, does that division go away?
But I think that my answer has changed now that I can't remember what I told you last time. But I'll tell you this. I wasn't armed with the fact that this was Cyborg's last fight. So let's say it's not. And all of a sudden, Cyborg, who was holding out, this is the way it goes when you get beaten. You got a no contract. Now you got to kind of come crawling back. That's just the game you're playing. So now she's saying she would like a rematch. This is a very weird. Could you rematch it? Bet your ass you could. Is that a rematch where people are jumping out to say, no, it's not, and I don't know why. It's just not. When Rose caught JJ and put her down in the first fight, people did want to see a rematch, to the point that when they rematched them, JJ went off as a 2-1 favorite. When Chris Weidman knocked out Anderson Silva the first time and they rematched, Anderson Silva in the rematch went off at a 2.5-1 favorite. There's just some matches you see where you go, okay, you know what, run that one back. We got to see that again, and not only that, we'll get a different outcome. I'm sure of it, and our gamblers are willing to bet on it. And I don't know why. I don't know why, Joel. Tell me if you feel right. It just didn't have that same feeling. And does that mean if they were going to fight again, I wouldn't sit down and watch, and we'd have great discussions? No, not at all. There was something about it. The decisiveness, I didn't want to see Ronda in there with Amanda again, and this fight was only 6 seconds longer. There was something about it that just wasn't calling for an immediate rematch. The other side of the coin, if Amanda is to rematch her, well, then what happens at 135? You got to get on with it. We've seen that with every champion, most recently as Saturday, with Daniel Cormier being stripped of his title, or relinquishing the title, as he would like to say, and just keeping the heavyweight crown. Everybody has to do that. Conor versus Eddie. Conor's got to let the 145 title go. So something has to happen. That's all I'm saying to you. And it would seem as though if Amanda was to return to 135 and get involved in this Holly Holm and Aspen Ladd business that you're talking about, that there is a big question of what's going to happen to 145. Because now let's say that Amanda gives up 140, doesn't do the rematch, goes back to 35, gives up 145. Does that mean your next fight is Cyborg versus somebody, maybe Megan Anderson, somebody though, for the vacated championship? It would now be vacated? You could do all of these things. They just all feel a little bit off. And so it opens to conversation that is the most likely thing, should Cyborg not come back to the title.
Why is it that as soon as somebody wins two belts, all we want to do is take a belt away from
always.
Them? Always. I have no idea. That doesn't make any sense to me. Amanda, there isn't women's fighting has come moon miles, and they are doing wonderful. But the reality is, that's not a really big pool.
Sure.
Okay. So build the pool. Bring some people in. There's a gal I just watched last night from on the PFL named Kyla Harrison, who is a hammer. Two-time Olympic gold judo medalist, gold medalist, two times. She's smoking people. Let's go get her over in the mix. Don't give up on the division and don't give up on women and quit taking everybody's belts away. That's stupid. It doesn't happen in boxing. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, why? The very first thing is, well, we can't have them fight again. Because she smooshed her in a minute when she went off as a 4-1 favorite. I can't believe we missed the boat on this one. Cyborg was a 4-1 favorite. So she's owned that title as the baddest woman on the planet, either her or Ronda, for, you know, 10 years, 12 years. Man, run it back. Run it back if you have to. Amanda should be the one making the decisions. It shouldn't be me or you or anybody else or Dana if she's going to go out there and be an active champion.
All right, well, either way, let's just look at it from what you just said. I think that I would agree with you on that. I think Dana would even let her make the decision. But do you think that she's going to come in and go, give me Cyborg again? Come on, you don't beat someone and then call them out. Maybe you get called out first and then you respond. But if Amanda's making the decision, she can't just go to Dana and go, hey, give me a fight with Cyborg. Dana's going to go, but you just beat her. You're calling out someone you just beat? See where that gets weird? See where that gets weird, though? And then as far as stripping somebody, I agree with you. I'm guilty of that, too. I love the competitiveness that somebody would go up, go down, grab all of these belts. The pushback, though, to answer your question, why are we in such a hurry to strip them, is you do have to get on with it. To put Jones and Gus in there in such a big fight, in such a hard fight, in a rematch, and not have the title on the line. When Daniel Cormier just simply can't come back and defend. You know what I mean? You got to get on with the locker room.
That's a little bit different because everybody knows Daniel doesn't want to go back to 205.
Sure.
Daniel wants a big fight with Brock.
But the same thing happened with Conor McGregor. Everybody knew he did not want to go back to 145. So eventually you got to get on with it.
Yeah, but Conor also ran over and did a boxing match.
Sure.
So that was a little different too. It's not like this happens all the time.
No, I agree. You just asked when it does happen. Why are we in a hurry to strip them? I was just offering, you know, because the locker room gets held up. That's the only part I resent about the sport is that we only get to do it three times a year. I hate that part. I don't know why we don't get to do it six times a year. Or I have no idea why people think they need 4 months. I don't get it. But that's one of the problems because you only have three times a year, right?
Yeah,
you got to defend the belt.
The best thing for women's fighting is for Amanda to fight at both weights.
Let me switch gears completely on you because this just jumped in my head. I know about Marty from Nebraska. I got to the bottom of it right after the show. Did I update you?
You did not. I haven't seen you or saw you.
Well, either way, I'd have to re-say it for the audience. So, okay, Marty from Nebraska had me falling over. I mean, that was the funniest thing that I ever said. But you were also saying that he was claiming the whole Nigerian thing was a gimmick. So I'm like, okay, how far is he?
You said that.
No, those were your terms. You actually said that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Actually, to the point of my story. But that's why I had to look into it. Where I'm like,
okay, so you know. Now you know.
Yes, but I'm filling you in. And for the people that listened last week, you had said that Nigeria, it was all a gimmick. I'm like, okay, how far does this go? No, actually had nothing to do with that. Only had to do with Marty from Nebraska. And the story is this. When Usman wrestled in junior college, he wrestled out of Nebraska. in a junior college in Nebraska. The other side of it is when he would train at the Olympic Training Center, it was too hard for people to remember Kamar Usman. It was just a weird name, or they couldn't pronounce Usman, or they couldn't pronounce Kamar. Whatever it is, Usman told them, you know, just call me Marty. So Usman actually gave the name to himself, but at some point in time, roughly 2008-ish, in the wrestling circle, Usman was known as Marty from Nebraska. He was known as that. He introduced himself. It was never meant to be this huge slide
and
tease him.
Hold on.
I'm just saying it. So Askren got a hold of this news. So we just called him that. Askren wasn't actually looking to go out there and make something up or give him a hard time. At one point in 2008, when he was at the training center in Olympic, you know, Askren's the Olympic, and he's out there, he was known as Marty from Nebraska.
Marty from Nebraska is Usman, but his name is not Marty.
That's exactly 100%. Right.
100%.
Yes, this is not like a Muhammad Ali changing his name from Cassius Clay. Is that something you can say? Because that's what I thought, too. Well, maybe Kamar over time changed his name. Is that what you thought?
I wasn't sure with
it. Yeah, so
Ellenberger said, the guy's name is Marty.
I don't think that's right. From the information that I've got, his name is not Marty and was never Marty. He was with a group of new guys at the training center. And instead of, and I kind of get this with a name like Chael, where people are calling you, you know, Shale and Kale. And
Marty?
Call me Bob if you want to just.
Where does Marty come from?
As long as everybody calls me the same thing, I'll know when to turn my head. So all I'm saying, I'm giving you the update on the story. Marty from Nebraska is how he used to be known. I just wanted to put a cap in it.
Okay.
All right.
Let me take it
in a new direction. What is your final opinion or analysis of not only BJ Penn's performance, but where does he go from here?
He stops fighting. He hadn't won a fight in 10 years.
All right, he calls it.
He's got to. That's all the new fans are going to remember. They're not going to remember that you know, 10, 12 years ago, BJ was fighting at heavyweight against Machida, okay? That he was one of the toughest guys on the planet. Does that mean the sport's gotten so much better? No. It means a lot more people are doing it and a lot more athletes are doing it. And that style isn't getting there no more.
Yeah. No, it's very tough. I mean, that's a very real thing. You know, the guys that did well when BJ did well just aren't doing well now. Not very many of them. You know, Randy. One of the reasons we compliment Randy is because he was able to change with the times. When he started this, it was just wrestlers. He was just in there as a wrestler and then was able to evolve and start the dirty boxing, which was his level of stand-up fighting, and then, you know, throw submissions up here and there. It's one of those guys that could evolve with the sport, and it's a really hard thing. And I don't necessarily tell you that I don't think BJ has evolved, but to remind you, when BJ got into the UFC, his claim to fame is he was the first ever American to win the world championships in jiu-jitsu. That was a huge, tremendous honor and deal back then. The reason I remind you of that history is this, while the setup to that technique, the Imanari roll that Ryan Hall did, was a fantastic, difficult, outside-the-box, perhaps spontaneous technique, it still only gets you into a heel hook. And a heel hook's not that hard to defend. It's important to defend. It's a dangerous technique, but it's not that hard. BJ did it the wrong way. He quite literally turned the wrong way. Why I suggest that to you is it is very common, Joel, and you have seen this mainly because you're a wrestling mark, but you have seen a lot of our wrestling heroes do that. It worked for Dan Henderson to switch over to a striker, but it didn't work. You know, the Josh Koscheck's and the Johnny Hendrix's of the world that start to fall in love with their hands, but then they forget how to wrestle. I don't know if this is what happened with BJ. I'm just trying to tie it in based on the 2 minutes that I saw. I didn't get to see enough to fully form an analysis, but it would appear that perhaps BJ over, and again, coming in as the world jiu-jitsu champion, that was his claim to fame, coming in and getting caught in a heel hook, for one, two, to defend it the wrong way. It's like, man, is he one of those guys that started spending so much time on the kickboxing and in that realm that he got away from his bread and butter? I guess that's all I'm suggesting for you. I also agree with your analysis and Dana White's analysis that BJ has done everything under the sun, achieved every height you could possibly get, from main events to sold out arenas, and that's before we even get to the championships and multiple weight classes and coaching of the Ultimate Fighter and all of these wonderful things, that it does appear, hey, You did your job. You did enough, and let's move on. There was a part of me, and I'll tell you, I don't have an update on BJ's knee. I hope he's okay. I'm speaking to this from an assumption that he is, though he did limp out of the ring. I'm coming to you from an assumption that he didn't tear anything. And if I'm right about that, I'm not sure that fight wasn't about as perfect as it could get. I had people texting me and calling me because they knew I was there and that fight was an undercard fight and saying, how did BJ's fight go? And I just responded, it could not have gone any better for BJ Penn. And they all were thinking, oh, BJ must have beat Ryan. And I was going, no, what I'm saying is I've seen BJ in there with Dennis Seaver get from beat from pillar to post, get his face blown. You know, he's a really tough guy. He doesn't quit. He doesn't go away, and he takes a hell of a beating. I've seen him take that kind of a beating from Rory McDonald. I've seen him take that kind of a beating from Nick Diaz. I've seen him take that kind of a beating twice from Frankie Edgar. So for him to go out there, have a grappling heavy match, get caught in a submission, have his experience, and walk the hell out in one piece, as somebody who likes BJ Penn, I will just tell you, I would stand by my statement, I don't know that the fight could have gone any better for BJ. Guys, you like saving money, right? You know what's even better? Saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. And if that revs your engine, then get this, because you can do it right from your living room. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Did you get a chance to see the PFL last night where they gave out million-dollar checks?
I saw Vinny fight.
Okay, perfect. That's the one I wanted to talk about. So I don't know the last time somebody went out on top, and it happened last night.
Go on.
That Sean O'Donnell guy.
Oh, he beat Vinny and retired?
Yes, retired with a check.
I did not know that.
Now, that fight, you watched that fight.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it. I mean, that was an interesting fight. Vinny.
Go ahead.
Vinny comes out in the first round. Gets his position. You figure he's a 4-1 favorite. Vinny is a 4-1 favorite.
He had an amazing tournament.
Doesn't get his submission in the first round. So for the next three rounds, he gets pummeled on his feet, keeps pulling guard. O'Donnell keeps popping up, and they call it. His corner called it. And I was like, thank God.
Between rounds?
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, I talked to Vinny last night. He was in the hospital getting a CTE. His arm had gone numb, and he had something wrong, and I think it was with his neck. But and he got very scared. He got very worried and scared and was just trying to survive. So, yeah, the pulling guard, I hear what you're saying. A lot of people thought it was exhaustion that got him. No, man, his arm went out. But I agree with you. And the IFL, or the PFL, rather, overall, what's your assessment? Do they come back? They come back strong?
I don't know. I mean, they gave out a bunch of money last night. Right, I thought it was pretty entertaining.
And you talk about the Kyla Harris, and you're talking about trying to get her over to the UFC for Cyborg. Now that Cyborg's a free agent, I would suggest that the shoe's on the other foot. It is up to the PFL to get Cyborg signed and get Cyborg over there to take on Kyla. Do you disagree?
No, I was trying to get Kyla over just to the UFC in any regards. I mean, I think that gal's an absolute hammer. I don't know if my name's right, whether it's Sean O'Connell or O'Donnell. I had a bunch of notes at the car lot that you kidnapped me from. So if I'm wrong, it's basically your fault, not mine.
I wouldn't blame you.
Okay, now John Jones, let's go over there for. Now, did you hear what happened to me on New Year's Eve?
No.
I can't believe I didn't tell you.
Go ahead.
So I'm at Sandblast, you know, just right half block away from Miss H's house. Man, and I'm getting barboozled. I'm slamming shots. I'm drinking beer.
That sounds right.
I'm hammered. Somebody, when I'm leaving, they give me a half bottle of Fireball. And, you know, I only got to drive like 300 yards. And so I got the half bottle of Fireball right next to me. And I get pulled over like 100 yards from where I was going. And so I got the Fireball. And the cop has me roll down the window. And he says, I need your license and registration. I said, hold on. So I slammed the Fireball because I didn't want to have alcohol in the car.
Right.
Okay. And he says, hey, have you been drinking? And no, at that point I hadn't been drinking, and he said, no, will you take a breathalyzer? I said, no, but I'll take a urine test. So they bring me down. I park my car. They bring me down, and I go into the West Lynn Police Department, and I take a urine test, and they're like, dude, your blood alcohol content is like 10 times over the legal limit. And I said, no, in 1988, I got a DUI in Parson, Kansas, and that is still in my system. And they were like, that makes complete sense. Go on with your bad self.
You
guys are so funny on this John Jones thing. John Jones literally competed with steroids in his body, and nobody's talking about it. Not only did he do that, oh, God, he set the stage to continue taking steroids for 7 more years, and you mutts all buy it. You're like, he says, yeah, man, this is pretty scary stuff. This stuff can stay in my system for 7 years. And I'm like, oh my God, John's gonna fail every drug test for 7 years, and everybody's gonna be like, of course he is. Hey, listen, John Jones. You are a bad, bad, bad man. Whether you're on the sauce or off the sauce, you are a bad, bad man. But you can't be a good guy. Okay, you can't. You failed 3 drug tests. You've done all sorts of things. You can't. You don't have a redemption story. You're too stupid to even be the villain. Everything's set up for you right now to be the villain, and you're too dumb to be the villain. He can't wear either hat.
I appreciate the build-up to that story, and I was thinking that was pretty ridiculous that you smashed Fireball while pulled over by the police. But now I get it. I see where you went. I will tell you, though, you kind of scolded the audience there for buying. I don't think they bought it. I don't think the people went for this at all. I mean, this was a bit of a cluster. Well, let's see how this whole thing ends up playing out.
Let's see what the Nevada Athletic Commission says.
Well, I mean, that's a big deal. I know what the Nevada Athletic Commission said. They said no. I mean, I realize the story that has been reworked to put out there that they couldn't get a hearing together in time and the commissioners were out of town for the holiday. That's a cover story. The answer is no. We're not licensing you. Now, that doesn't mean that they couldn't sit down and, you know, have their doctors and their experts and get changed. But, no, I mean, we got Nevada's answer. Nevada said no. It would be pretty interesting, too. You know, there was something that had come up. So they did the weigh-ins. And then Nowinski went and spoke to the media right at the weigh-ins. And don't forget, when John went through this whole thing, he didn't go through it in Nevada. He went through it in California. So he had to have a hearing before the California State Athletic Commission. And he did hang his hat on, hey, I got no idea where this came from, and go ahead and punish me, but I'm not copping to a thing. He did hang his hat on that. So when he went back in to have his hearing in front of California, he had failed 2 more tests. 2 more tests had come up from USADA, but they did not turn that information over to California.
Yeah, nobody cares.
I understand that. But California cared. California felt they should have had that information. Now, I'm not here to weigh in. Do you see where a commission like California would like to have knowledge at a disciplinary hearing of 2 more abnormal tests?
Yes.
Okay. That didn't happen. Those tests were out there, but they were not notified, and they held a hearing. There's no foul ball on that. Nobody has to have information within their organization and pass that to another. But California's stance was, hey, this was a little underhanded, and we should have been given that information. I'm not coming to you with an opinion on that. I'm sharing you with the story because this had come up. And they even said, I think it might have been Errol that asked the question. They even said, well, in hindsight, shouldn't have you given California that information? If your hands are clean and you're above board, to which Nowinski was very honest and said, yes.
Here, let's knock this around a little bit more. So okay. This is a mess. This is a mess. You got a guy that has this stuff in his system. They've already said, okay, it's going to stay in his system. Where do you go from here? Why the next guy that has something in his system that has failed the test before, why isn't he get a pass? Where do you go from here? How do you unwrap that moving forward? This is what I don't understand. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
That's where the pushback on this has come with what you just said. There was other guys in the exact same spot. Lawler was one of them, Tom, as well as Frank Mir for the same substance. The exact same spot Frank Mir was in. Both gone, both will never be back. And so that was a big thing. USADA used logic in this, and they're right. They got it right. John has residue from a substance that he was already caught for and already punished for and already served his time for. It's still, for whatever reason, lingering somewhere within his system. The way that USADA has explained the rules, including on a video on their own website, is that you won't be repunished if that happens. You're just unlicensable. So to come in and license him becomes the question. Can you license a guy who has a residue? If you want to use logic, I'm all for that. But I have to tell you, in the history of USADA, they have never used logic or opinion over that of the test itself. They have told every fighter, even the ones that were able to prove a contaminated substance, and the audience gets very tired of hearing the term contaminated substance, but for somebody to actually prove that, all the steps involved to actually prove you took a substance that was contaminated, is very sophisticated. So whenever that's ruled on, it's very meaningful. I guess moving forward, we do need an answer to your question. How are we going to do this moving forward? Are we going to go off the information that USADA put out in a video on their own website, which says if it's in your system, you may not obtain a license? Are we going to do that, or are we going to now start rejecting the science and turning to logic? I'm okay with either one, but we do have to pick one.
Logic and opinion are two different things. They're two completely different things. Everybody keeps talking about logic. Like, well, logically, he wouldn't have taken steroids and then quit taking them and then taken them again and passed all these tests. Everybody keeps saying that is logic. Okay, that's not logic. That's opinion. Logic is, if it is in your system, you took it. That is logic. Okay, this is, it's so stupid. I can't believe it happened. I cannot believe it happened. Would Daniel Cormier have taken that fight? Had they moved it to California, if those two were fighting? That was crazy. The whole thing felt like a work to me. All the way down to the very end, where they don't even interview Gus after the fight, and Jones is in there with his whole camp doing some kind of rugby chant or something, like they pulled off some miracle. They moved the whole show for this guy. It was ridiculous. And another thing, you think about the performance, okay? You being involved in this business and fighting in this business and knowing as much as you do, somehow you miss the boat a lot of times. All the stress that was placed on the fighters this week was incredible. They've trained to fight at a specific time in a specific place, and that's changed on a week's notice. So that means all their family has to do, more stress is in each and every fight. You go down to the Kat Zagana fight, where she gets her eye split. That a millimeter is what cut her eye open. This whole sport is based on millimeters. Okay, that was a wrong thing to do to move the card. It was 100% wrong. I still don't know the answer, because the Dana White that I met almost 20 years ago and I've watched build this sport would have never moved that card. He would have never moved that card, whether he believed John Jones was right or not. So the answer to the question is, why did that happen and why did they move the card? I'm not buying it that they moved it because it wasn't the right thing to do. It wasn't the right thing to do. And the next guy, if anybody is going to fight John Jones, it's not going to be Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier fights at heavyweight. John Jones already said he's not going to go up to heavyweight. The next guy that fights John Jones is named Anthony Smith.
Oh, without question. Yeah, top contender. And I tend to agree with you. You know, Jones had given his in-ring interview, and I interpreted what he said, because he said, "Hey, Daniel," and he tapped his own belt. And he said, "Hey, Daniel, you know, come on back, and, you know, I'm waiting for it," whatever it was. But my interpretation to that was, we'll do the fight, but we got to do it at 205. And Daniel Cormier took the bait and even went to social media and said, if you have VADA and USADA involved, I will come back to 205. Now, the reason I bring up 205, I do believe those two are going to fight again, regardless of Daniel's self-imposed expiration date or the Brock Lesnar fight or anything else. However, if you are at the table and trying to make this fight, the very first thing you have to determine before the who, what, and the when, and the where, oddly, is what weight are we going to do it at? They got to come to terms. Are we going to do this at heavy, or are we going to do it at 205? So my interpretation of Jones tapping his belt and saying, come get it, was him saying, I will only do it at 205. I don't think that stands. The guy's got the right to change his mind, but that's where I got on that. Do you have any final takes? We got to get out of here. We're out of time. Hopes, goals, dreams, anything you want to get off your chest?
Peace.
Peace. All right. For Joel, I'm Chael. Thank you for listening, even though we have a bit of an abrupt ending. But that's the way it works over here in the Portland studio. So until Friday, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
From all your friends at Podcast One, thank you for a wonderful 2018, and we hope 2019 is even better.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
This is Heather Dubrow from Heather Dubrow's World.
Hey, it's Steve Austin from the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, this is Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana from Riggle's Picks.
This is Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine.
Hey, this is Kelsey from The Lady Gang. Happy New Year from Podcast One.